Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday afternoon. Joining us from Philadelphia, where he was at the Sixers game last night and I believe is headed to New York later today, is Tim Bontemps.
That is correct. Hello, fellas.
And potentially being banned from only the Mavericks again, but maybe the Indiana Pacers after his story that dropped on Wednesday.
You don't even know what their arena is called. Howdy, partners.
It's called the Gainbridge Fieldhouse, I believe.
It is now. It is.
This is how I know every day I'm reminded how old I'm getting. And like when I see these arenas that have had 3, 4, 5 names.
It's the only time you post on Instagram is this arena's had 5 names. This arena's had the same name.
Well, it's a little bit of a trick to say, hey, here's a picture from Philly. Here's a picture from Atlanta, whatever.
Oh, you crafty little social media maven, you.
I would never accuse myself of that. But let's start with this story that you did that released on Wednesday, McMahon. It was really a story. I don't know. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it was really a story about how Luka Doncic and Rick Carlisle didn't like each other, for a long time, and it led to a fracture in their relationship and frames the way we probably should look at Luka going forward and Carlisle going forward. But this had stuff in it dating back, I think, to 2015.
This had stuff dating back to, like, Carlisle made mistakes, relationship mistakes, before the Mavericks even drafted Luka that negatively impacted that relationship.
And was it mistakes or just the way he operated that irritated Luka?
I think you can categorize them as mistakes, because let's be honest, as much as the NBA and NBA coaching is an X's and O's business, if you don't get the relationships right, you're not going to be around for very long. Although, you know, look, Rick didn't, there was a lot of relationship issues with, he's an abrasive, demanding, you know, whatever you want to call it, kind of coach. And he was able to get through a lot of that for a lot of years. But when you get on the wrong side of your franchise centerpiece, of this young, potentially generational star, you're not going to last very long. And the writing was on the wall. Rick recognized that very clearly when, one, Luka sent word of, hey, I don't want him coming to Slovenian training camp. Please tell him to stay home. And then right after that, two, Rick suggested the possibility of a contract extension with Mark Cuban and was told, Rick, that ain't happening. And then pretty soon thereafter, Rick says, well, I'm going to step down. And a week later, he's the Indiana Pacers head coach. He knew it was probably going to be a week to week, month to month kind of situation going into the season. He wanted no part of that, understandably, you know, with him being a hot commodity as a coach. But, you know, to blow an opportunity to continue coaching a potential multi-MVP type of talent, yeah, Rick made some mistakes for sure.
Well, and you covered him all of those 13 years, if I'm not mistaken, that he was the head coach of the Mavericks. You had your run-ins with him, and he wasn't your boss, and you didn't spend 8 hours a day with him or more. So you would be as good as anybody to speak on. Really, seriously, who was with him for the 13 years other than like you
Cuban, obviously. I mean,
Donnie
and
Nelson.
Casey Smith and, Don Kalkstein, the sports psychologist. I mean, there's several people in the franchise, but yeah, I know Rick really well. And, you know, all things considered, I'm not sure if this is true today, but all things considered, I've had a really good relationship with Rick Carlisle and a half kid. That one reason that Rick and I got along so well is we're both complete assholes. sorry about that, Jackson. You're gonna have to do a little bleepage there, but it's true. Now, that didn't necessarily help him bond with Luka.
Well, you know, do you have something in common with Luka as well? Are you stopping short of saying that?
Yeah, our conditioning.
That's a good line, buddy. I thought the way you started the story talking about the Dennis Smith thing, it obviously Dennis Smith, Rick was right about Dennis Smith's yes. player, right? Dennis Smith's not a very good NBA player. But I think sort of...
Just real quick, Buntemps, Dennis Smith and Doncic were boys, really bonded when Luka got to the league. Even though Dennis Smith had some promise as a rookie, Carlisle never thought he was going to be a running mate for Doncic, and he sort of broke him apart and they traded him, and that upset Luka. That's what Bontemps is referring to.
It wasn't that he traded him. It was the way that he treated him. And you know, to be clear, Luka has never been a guy who's, to this point in his career, has meddled in personnel decisions, right? But, you know, if you talk to people who have Luka's best interest in mind that aren't affiliated with the Mavericks, everybody was on the same page of, hey, Luka and Dennis Smith Jr., that's not a duo moving forward. You can be right in your assessment, and certainly Rick Carlisle was right in his assessment. Hey, Donovan Mitchell's the guy we should draft, not Dennis Smith Jr. Rick soured. He was right. He was very clear. He totally soured on Dennis Smith Jr. by midway through his rookie year. And then he treated him really, really poorly once Luka arrived, really going in back to his rookie year, but especially when Luka arrived, and Luka took umbrage with that.
Yeah, and I think if you look, like what I was going to say was, if you look at the way that situation played out, the way the Solid Measure situation played out, the way the J.J. Barea situation played out, like when you talked about mistakes being made, McMahon, I think that's where, if you go back and look at it, and you and I talked about that privately at the time, where like you could see these signpost things along the way where it's like, you've got Luka Doncic here. He obviously can be a bit of a temperamental guy if anybody watches him on the court, but he's clearly the guy you're building your franchise around. And here are some easy ways to keep this guy happy. Like, have Salah Meji around, who's a, you know, backup center. Have J.J. Barea around, who's a guy who's got a really good relationship with him and is a guy who can maybe play a little bit for you off the bench at the end of your bench. You know, he's got this relationship with Dennis Smith. Why are you going at Dennis Smith and causing friction there when you don't need to, right? It's all this stuff
and you're calling, you know, the thing that was just like, what in the hell? Is when he calls Dennis Smith Jr. out in front of the team. You're jealous of Luka. And they're like, dude, like we're buddies. Like, you know, we're hanging out. We're playing video games. Like, we're friends. And Dennis is, he wasn't a good fit, but he was trying. It wasn't like he was being, you know, I've got to have the ball in my hands. This is my show. There wasn't any of that. So
the point is, like, rather than just analyzing that thing, it was just that right off the bat, Carlisle got on the wrong side of Luka.
Yeah,
Luka was a rookie.
The relationship was cracked within the foundation of this relationship was cracked within the first few weeks, and all the attempts to kiss butt and shield him from criticism, all that in the future didn't matter because the relationship was cracked, trust was broken, and respect was lost.
Okay, let me ask you this. So you have this very well reported story about Luka's issues with Carlisle, and frankly, maybe potentially Luka's issues with authority that he doesn't like, which is going to be regular in the NBA because nobody, as Paul Silas, the man who taught me more about the NBA than anything, taught me 20 years ago. I will try to imitate him poorly. In the NBA, ain't nothing going to be a bed of roses. You know, it's just never going to be that. So if Luka is going to have a problem with coaches he does 100% agree with, that's one thing. Then we have Donnie Nelson getting fired and possibly, and I'll use the word possibly, but if you want to override this word, McMahon, that's fine, because he leaked stuff about the team to The Athletic. Then you have Bob Vulgaris, the guy who Nelson didn't like. He leaves and does a podcast with Pablo Torre where he talks about issues that he had with Luka, that Luka had with him, Donnie Nelson. Then you have Carlisle getting out of there. You have a first-time executive in Nico Harrison, who is now running the show, but I don't know much about it. Everybody likes him as a person.
Yeah.
He's doing this for the first time ever. And again, Red Auerbach made mistakes his first few years. It's not recorded in history, but I promise you the greatest executives ever screw up out of the gate. And it hasn't exactly been a merry-go-round already for Jason Kidd They just had another difficult loss Wednesday night, although didn't have Luka, but blew a chance to beat the Lakers and lost. This is not, it's not trending great. If you're a Mavericks fan, without getting into detail blow by blow here, I'm not real happy about the way this is all going with my young star.
No, and what the Mavericks are trying to do is they've had a cultural reset, right? Because it was an absolute...
Have they?
Well, they've got...
I didn't even get into the whole Porzingis Doncic issue.
They're attempting to have a cultural reset.
Yes, they are attempting. There is a new GM. There is a new coach. The way I said it was a Game of Thrones type of thing over the last few years where, you know, there's this guy's backstabbing, this guy's backstabbing, this guy's worried about him as a threat,
And I also didn't even bring up the whole thing with which happened elsewhere in the organization with the allegations that the Cuban had to handle and run people out.
Like if you look at poor NBA culture over the last decade, the Mavericks have to be very prominent in that conversation. No question. And we, you know, you're talking about business side, front office, coaching. I mean, there's been a lot of mess with the Mavericks. Now, Nico Harrison had nothing to do with that. You know, head coach Jason Kidd had nothing to do with that. So there is a cultural reset. Now, listen, there is one major constant theme, and he signs a check and the buck stops with him. Mark Cuban, it is his responsibility to clean this up, to get it right. And he's the attempt here. You hire Nico, who is, you mentioned, he's widely respected throughout the league. And, you know, people talk about the relationships he has with players from 2 decades as a Nike executive, but it's not players, just players. It's coaches, it's agents, it's executives, it's scouts. A lot of the grassroots stuff. Like I've talked to scouts who absolutely love him. He is a communicator. He is a connector. There is hope that he can help when issues arise, because they always will, that he can be somebody who helps that process and doesn't muddy it up. Kid, look, it's not like Kid didn't have his missteps in his previous two brief head coaching stops, but he has, to the point of kind of being a punchline, he's prioritized communication. I mean, how many people got their jokes off about the 3-man leadership council? And like, hey,
one person coaches on have been doing that for a long time.
Yeah. And hey, rah, rah, let's play all 15 guys in the first few quarters of our home
bizarre.
Opener.
That was,
you know, and all this kind of stuff. But he's at least, and honestly, he's, I think, prioritized psychology over strategy so far this season. I'll say this, there was the two guys that you would call the franchise cornerstones, Doncic and Porzingis. It's been well documented. They weren't getting along last year, and it was very passive aggressive. They weren't arguing and bickering. They just weren't talking. They weren't high-fiving. Basically, they didn't talk all summer. They come back. It's time to play pickup, and it's, hey, what's up, man? How you doing? Dap up. Cool. We're turning the page. That has been better, but the on-court product has not been. And we can go down a long list of reasons, but with all things Mavs, and like people say, well, you know, why was the focus of this story Luke and Rick's relationship? Rick had bad relationships with a whole bunch of players. That's true. But there's one player who everything revolves around with the Mavericks, rightfully so. And that's Luka. So, and if we talk about the Mavs issues this season, Luka being a out of shape, still an all-star caliber player, but he ain't an MVP candidate. He ain't anything close. And honestly, he's one of the worst defensive players in the league this year because he's out of shape. He's bickering with referees. Like, he's not yelling at his coach, but he's still...
By the
time
you're in your fourth year, you ought to be taking flight.
Well, and the argument is he has. And that's what's so crazy.
He took flight. Like, is he a better player now than he was 3 years ago?
Yes, he's better than he is as a rookie. But, you know, so the thing about Luka is we hold him to the standard of his talent, which is historically elite. Like, you look the last 50 years, two guys have been first-team All-NBA twice before they turned 23. Luka Doncic, Kevin Durant. So the thing with Luka being – Luka can be a Hall of Famer and come to camp, you know, 15 pounds overweight every year. He can. He's that good. He can have a perennial all-star. Now, he might not have as long a career, but he can have a perennial all-star Hall of Fame caliber career playing his way into shape every year. But he can't achieve his potential, which is to get in the conversation of an all-time great, to be a multi-champion, a multi-MVP type of guy. And look, it's not a very good roster around him. And that's okay, Nico, first time GM. You don't have a whole lot of assets. You've got the pressure of competing because you have a bona fide superstar. How are you going to upgrade this roster? that's a tough gig for a first time GM. But Luka doesn't get a pass for the Mavericks' struggles this season. The Mavericks' mediocrity, you know, he bears a lot of responsibility for that.
All you got to do is go back to this summer and see how Luka played in the Olympics and getting Slovenia to the medal round, and the way he's played over the past couple of years in the playoffs against the Clippers.
It's so inspiring. I mean, I talked about this before. I don't want to go over this again for our listeners, but it was just so inspiring. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. And you, like, if you're a Mavericks fan, you're like, why? It was so, watching Luka play that way, you're like, anything is possible.
Yeah.
It's so.
And again, and that's the standard he's held to, because you have seen, like, you have seen the potential for him to be in that, like, Bird, Magic, LeBron, like that level of historic greatness. You've seen that potential at such a young age. So him coming back and, like, very good is not good enough for a guy who's proved that he's capable of greatness. And, you know, I mentioned the defensive stuff, and it's terrible transition defense. Part of that's not being in shape. Part of that's bickering with referees. It's awful half-court defense as well. I get that on-off stats and defense rating as an individual stat, it can be flawed, but this is glaring. 112.2 with him on the floor, 101.8 with him off the floor. In other words, you know, top three in the league with him off the floor, bottom five with him on the floor. Come on, dude. Like, and he's never going to be a stopper, but you can't be that bad.
No, and that's the part that you really need to see him take another step in, right? I mean, we saw in that game last night against the Lakers, you could see where the talent deficiencies are across the Mavs roster when Luka's not on the court, right? There isn't a ton of talent on that roster. But that being said, to your point, if his conditioning and effort are better, his defense will be better, and therefore their team will be better. Yeah, right? and that's the stuff that has to improve.
Yeah, and they need guys. Like, the whole team's basically been in a season-long three-point shooting slump. And, you know, that stuff probably will end up evening out. But look, sometimes I do have to remind myself, you know, Luka is a 22-year-old kid with the weight of the world on his shoulders, right? Who's been in the spotlight since he was really 13, you know, went to Real Madrid at 13, and everybody in Europe knew who he was. And you know, there's human elements there. He is an immature, in a lot of ways, 22-year-old kid who needs to grow up, which is easier said than done when you've got the kind of pressure and spotlight and all those things. Having said that, like the relationship with Rick, yeah, Luca had his faults with it, but you know, to be immature about it, Rick started it. And are you, who you hold responsible? The guy who got here as a teenager for his immaturity, or the 60 something year old experienced head coach for, you know, his really, I would say immaturity is not, you know, his control freak, dictator style, and really just a mistreatment of people around Luka that completely turned him off and killed any chance of that thing blossoming.
If I was a Mavs fan, I'd be depressed.
It's not a happy story, and it's also not a story that anybody involved wanted me to write.
No,
these
I'm
things
sure.
happen.
I mean, like, you know, Bontemps. I mean, this is what we know about McMahon. He's not going to get intimidated by anybody. You know. He has a 13-year relationship with Carlisle. This story does not help Rick Carlisle in any way. You know, this is why McMahon's McMahon. He's not, he doesn't, you know, when he says something, he's not playing favorites.
No, that's true. I also think it's a little strong to say I'd be depressed if I was a Mavs fan. They still have Luka Doncic on their team. I mean,
well,
I think
agree.
There's
I mean,
about, there's about 25 happy? Teams that would want to be in their position, even
I
with
agree.
The other faults that they have.
I agree, but when I got Luka and saw him as a rookie, I thought by now I'd be like winning 60 games. And
well,
and
but here's the other thing to remember. The last 2 years in the playoffs, the Mavericks very nearly got out of the first round against the Clippers both times against Kawhi Leonard, by the way, who was healthy. Mm-hmm. And if they had played any other team in the first round, maybe in either year, they might've made it to the conference finals or farther. So, I mean, that's part of the context here that has to be remembered. Like, yeah, Luka's not off to a great start this year. By the way, Trae Young, to this point this season, this year alone, has outplayed him. But
although the Hawks are sitting in the same, you know, they've made a deep playoff run, but they're sitting in that same mediocre boat.
They've had a weird season too, but Trae has been phenomenal this year. Brian wrote a story about him and James Harden in part today about foul drawing, but Trae has been great. But yeah, look, I mean, there's a lot of context around the Mavs with the way the last couple of years have gone, the way this year has gone. Luka's definitely disappointed this year. We talked about the MVP straw poll last week. Luka was barely on it. He was the favorite to win the award coming into the season. So yeah, it's been a disappointing year, but at the same time, if I was picking anybody in the league right now, who I wanted to ride with for the next 10 years, I'd be taking Luka over everybody else. So I'm only pushing back a little bit on, I'd be depressed if I was a Mavs fan. I think there's a lot to be excited about. It's just not currently at the moment. You know, this team is not one of the elite teams in the West, but there's time to get it right.
And your point about the Clippers series, I think, is important. You know, we can what if it all you want. But like last year, if Kawhi Leonard doesn't have maybe the best playoff performance of his brilliant career, of his two times finals MVP career, if he doesn't have maybe the best playoff performance of his career in game 6 in Dallas, the Mavericks get through the Clippers, and who knows, maybe they do make a deep run, and you know, some of these relationship fractures can be figured out or whatever. And I think the concern with the Mavericks is, okay, you needed a cultural reset, you got it, but as a basketball team, did you move in the right direction? And you know, we'll see. The season is young, and you know, they need Luka to be himself before we can really evaluate that. But it's a big TBD right now.
There's definitely work to be done. But if you haven't read the story, go read it. It's a great story.
All right. So speaking of the Clippers, last night their 4-game win streak was snapped by the Jazz. The game was in Utah, right?
Yes, sir.
Utah? Mm-hmm. Jazz 8th consecutive win. They won 9 of 10 overall. They're 20-7, which would make them the number one team in the East if they were over there, but only good enough for third behind the Juggernauts out West. Donovan Mitchell is having a very good year. You know, they had a bitter end, flame out in the playoffs last year when they couldn't beat the Kawhi Leonard-less Clippers. Mm-hmm. So anytime they play the Clippers, it's an important game for them, regardless of who's healthy. And so they're going along well. I mean, they have to be feeling like they're in the game. You know, they've got that chance at the title. And then yesterday, Danny Ainge gets announced as the CEO of the organization. And it's obviously unusual to name a new basketball operations leader midway through the year. It's super duper unusual for this to happen for a team that's so successful. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Dennis Lindsay, you know, he stepped down, but he was under pressure for a number of different reasons. But Dennis Lindsay, who was with that team for a decade, built that roster. Mm-hmm. They talked to some people, and I'm not looking to get aggregated here, but they definitely talked to some people in the league about coming in for this job, including people who were employed by other teams. I don't know whether there were job offers. I've heard all kinds of different things, but they definitely considered other people. And Ainge was rumored to be an option to come to Utah from the moment he left the Celtics, because right. he has a longstanding relationship with Ryan Smith, the owner. But to come in as CEO in this situation, and even CEO is a strange title. To my not Bontemps, do you know of any other basketball operations head who's got a CEO title?
I do not.
Yeah, and what they'll tell you is, hey, he's not replacing Dennis Lindsay. It is a different title. It's a different job. Call it what
but
you want.
But he is replacing Dennis Lindsay. Yeah, he's the head of basketball operations.
Yeah, right. So yeah, that's a semantical thing.
They had this press conference yesterday, and their owner, Ryan Smith, said this is an unprecedented role that hasn't existed. I was like, no, it's existed. It's called the person who makes the basketball decisions.
No, but Ainge is not the person who makes the basketball decisions. He's the person who probably makes the strongest recommendation to the new owner, who is very involved and ultimately has the final say. Ryan Smith is, you know, as he put it, he's like most modern ownership, is the way he put it when I talked to him yesterday. And he's going to make the final call. Now, he's going to rely, obviously, extremely heavily on the advice of Danny Ainge and Quinn Snyder and Justin Zanuck. And Ainge will, I'm sure, have the loudest voice, but this is Ryan Smith's show.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. And the reason it's Ryan Smith's show is, or the fact that it's Ryan Smith's show is the reason why Danny Ainge is in Utah, right? Going back even before last season ended, there was talk about this maybe happening in some form, because yeah. Danny Ainge, probably, you know, maybe him and Steve Young are probably the two most famous BYU athletic alums ever. Yeah. And he is
Jimmer Fredette.
Okay. I'm going to say Steve Young and Danny Ainge are a little higher level than Jimmer
Fredette. What about Uncle Jim McMahon, sir?
Right.
Yeah, either way. But Danny Ainge, BYU legend, Ryan Smith, massive BYU donor. They have been
both Ryan Smith and Danny Ainge are from Eugene, Oregon. I mean, I knew that Ainge was from Oregon. Yes. I didn't know Ryan. I mean, they're basically lifelong connection.
Yeah, yes, they've known each other for 15 years.
Yes.
Good friends. And then, you know, Danny Ainge did his play golf, hang with the fam, decompress, as he put it, for 6 months. And Ryan Smith said, hey, I'm going to go caddy for Tony Finau. I might be botching up that golfer's name. Okay, that guy. I'm going to go golf or caddy for my buddy at Tiger's tournament in the Bahamas. Why don't you come along? I got something I want to talk to you about.
Yep.
And pitched him on this role. And I'm sure they say that's when things got, I'm sure there had been some talks, but that's when things got hashed out. And here they are. And it is a unique opportunity for Ainge, as he put it, because you're talking about what can you do to get this team over the hump. You know, the thing with the Jazz is, hey, the Jazz tearing it up in the regular season, it kind of gets the ho-hum reaction, because we've seen it. We saw it last year. We've seen them have long winning streaks the last few years. Last year, they had the best record in the league. They haven't been able to get over that second round hump. But fellas, these boys, no, again, we got to see it in the playoffs to for them to prove it. But the Jazz are a regular season juggernaut. Do you realize that the Jazz, in a year where scoring is down significantly across the league, the Jazz are the most efficient offense in NBA history to this point? They are more efficient than the Nets were last season.
All right, we'll talk about the team in a second. What about Dwayne Wade? I thought
he's got a loud voice too.
Wow, this room is getting awfully loud. Now we got Justin Zanuck over here, and Ainge openly admits he doesn't even know Justin Zanuck. And when he talked to the Jazz about deals, he talked to Dennis Lindsay. Mm-hmm. Zanuck's by one of the Bontemps. You know Zanuck a little bit. He's like one of the best guys in the NBA.
Yeah,
he used to be an agent, but he doesn't come Andy off. Miller. He doesn't come off as a guy who used to be an agent. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's really, like Rob Pelinka, Bob Myers, like those guys came out of agent central casting.
Yeah. They've got that slick type of,
yes. Very
vibe polished.
Yes. Yes. They both look like, they would, be wearing Armani suits and shoes with no socks on the beach.
Yeah, Justin Zanuck definitely did not play with the Fab Five or at UCLA.
No, he did not.
No,
he's not posting anybody up.
No, but that relationship is going to be, I think, a very good one because, look, I went back and double-checked this yesterday after this happened. When Danny Ainge left the Celtics this summer, it was after the last season ended. There was the Celtics made a big to-do about this being a retirement. They said he was retiring in the press release. Everybody else involved said he was retiring. One person who said he wasn't retiring at any point during any of that was Danny Ainge.
He was retiring from the Celtics.
That's right. I went back and looked. I double-checked, and maybe I missed it somewhere, but I did a bunch of, Control-F searches, and I never found the word retire coming out of his mouth in any form. And so him coming back with the Jazz is not a surprise to me.
Yeah.
And him coming back in a role of CEO is also not a surprise to me because at this point in his life and after him, he had a heart issue a couple of years ago. He's dropped a bunch of weight since then. He's in much better shape. I'm not surprised that it's listed as a CEO title. That's more of a overseeing things title than a being in the weeds situation every day. Justin's very highly regarded executive in the league. He can handle all the day-to-day stuff. He has been doing all the day-to-day stuff in Utah. So Danny can kind of come in and do the stuff he wants to be involved in and be involved in some of the big picture decisions there. And, again, you have the connection with Ryan that makes a lot of sense for this to happen. And ultimately, if you're like McMahon said before, if you're Danny Ainge and you're looking to have a final act in your career, not only do you have all this history in Utah, but you're walking into this team that right now, even though they've had kind of at the beginning of the season, they had a bit of an up and down start. They have the third best record in the league. They're rolling along. They have Rudy Gay on the court now, gives them a little bit of a small ball five option they've never had. Mike Conley great looks signing. Fantastic. Donovan Mitchell's back to playing great. Rudy Gobert is dominating in the middle. I mean, I think they probably still need to try to find some ways to be a little more versatile in the playoffs. They probably need to find one more guy who can guard on the perimeter between now and the end of the season. But, sort of in the same way we're just talking about the Dallas situation, Utah, loses that series to the Clippers in part because the Clippers had some absolute ridiculous three-point shooting that probably isn't going to repeat. And that was sort of a lightning in a bottle situation. And they caught it and they knocked Utah out of the playoffs. And, the Jazz
and part of that was Terrence Mann turning into a Curry brother.
Well, that's what I mean, right? Like Terrence Mann, who's not exactly, Steph or Seth Curry, turned into Seth Curry for three games, and that was the end of their season. So it's easy to look at this team after the last few years and say, well, they haven't broken through yet. But like if you go back a couple of years, the Raptors were a team that hadn't broken through. And yes, they got Kawhi Leonard, but then things came together and they broke through. The Milwaukee Bucks last year, same thing. They had kind of run into a wall a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Things break right, they win. So if I'm Danny Ainge and I look around, not only are there the personal connections there, but yeah, if you get a chance to walk into a team like this, it's pretty easy to see why.
No one's debating that it's not a great move for Ainge. And no one's debating that the guy who's the billionaire who owns the team wants to hire his friend can do that for sure.
His friend has got a really impressive resume too. Like, let's not ignore that.
I'm just saying, this press conference, everybody was trying to make nice and they tried to explain how this was going to work and it didn't make sense to me. You got Dwayne Wade, who wasn't there and hasn't said anything to my knowledge. You got Dwayne Wade, you got Quinn Snyder, who's one of the smartest and probably one of the more influential coaches. You got Justin Zanuck, who will put the team together. And by the way, like while Danny Ainge is out there golfing, retrofitted this roster a little bit, who's now been demoted. You've got probably the most important voice in this whole thing, in Donovan Mitchell.
I was going to say Donovan Mitchell definitely has a voice.
I mean, Ryan Smith correctly sniffed out that the biggest threat to this team is somebody coming and trying to get Donovan Mitchell away from the Jazz, regardless of the fact that he signed the extension. He got an opt out and they're on the clock. And one of the reasons why he brought Dwayne in as a part owner in a sweetheart deal was because he knew that he needed to have Dwayne Wade's influence in that connection. And so to me, there's just, look, guys, maybe in 18 months, we're talking about the Jazz going for their second title. Mm-hmm. It's just like, wow, there's a lot of people in the kitchen here. A lot of people in the kitchen. Makes me wonder about how this is going to go. It really does.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in the kitchen, and the meal that's on the table is already pretty good.
Well, I guess that's a good way to put it, McMahon. As for the team, I think, they were a top. I know that they didn't finish as the number one defensive team last year. The Lakers did, but they were for a while.
I don't have it in front of me, but they were up there, and I think they were top five in both categories last year: offense, defense, efficiency. They're one in offense, five in defense, I believe, right now. And look, they're built to be a spectacularly explosive offensive team that's going to rely on Rudy Gobert to prop them up and make them a good defensive team. That's the way the Jazz are built.
Did you see what Marcus Morris said last night?
Did he take another shot at Rudy?
No, it was. He didn't. He said that basically they're not really good on defense, except for Rudy.
Yeah,
their defense is pretty basic. They just let him do all the work.
By the way, when people went after Gobert for the way that Clipper series went, that's the part that people ignored. The Jazz aren't very good defensively, except for Rudy Gobert, which is why all those guys in that Clipper series were walking to the rim, collapsing the defense and kicking out for threes. That was what caused things to go crazy. Not Rudy Gobert's inability to guard the 3-point line.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He can guard the 3-point line, just not when he has to come in and protect the rim and then try to back out to the corner.
That's right. By the way, just cause I looked it up, Utah last year was fourth in offense, third in defense, plus nine net rating, best in the league. This year, as McMahon said, first in the league in offense, 117.7. They are fifth in the league in defense. They have an 11.6 net rating, which is tied for Golden State as of right now for the single best in the NBA.
And I will say a big part of their defensive problems in that playoff series is Mike Conley missed five of the six games and played the other one on one hamstring. And Donovan Mitchell was still unbelievable offensively as a pure jump shooter.
But they were both injured
with his ankle. Yeah, and they were a total defensive disaster in that series.
Yeah. But
violins and stuff, because the Clippers like, okay, we didn't have Kawhi for a lot of that series. Right. So. Right.
But that's to your point earlier, right, McMahon? They've built this team around Rudy Gobert's ability. Look, in the prior years they played Houston, they lost in the playoffs because they couldn't score enough.
It was a brick fest, and they were playing old school Derek Favors at power forward.
Yep.
And they couldn't knock down. They got great shots and couldn't knock them down. They said, hey, screw this. We'll be a good defense team with Rudy Gobert, period.
That's right.
Let's surround him with shooting and playmaking. And they've done that.
And then last year they got in the playoffs and their two guards both were hurt and their perimeter defense already was an issue and it fell apart in that series. But that always the case because they built their team around Rudy's ability to make up for everything. So now that was why the Rudy Gay signing, and obviously it was a bit of a messed up thing because he comes in, he was hurt and he missed the first few weeks of the season. But now that he's out on the court, his ability to give them a real small ball option at center, that is something they have not had at any point in this run. And it could really be a difference making thing if he can settle into that role for them. Cause they have not had any ability to play small. They've had to try to just manufacture the minutes when Rudy's on the bench. Or Rudy Gobert is on the bench. And if that works, that's a potential game changing thing for them going forward.
Yeah. The team is built really, really well. They're not perfect, but considering they're in Utah and they don't have free agency at their disposal, really, they signed Bogdanovich in free agency, but they're not able to draw stars in free agency. The team is built really, really well. Dennis Lindsay and Justin Zanuck did a really good job. Quinn Snyder has done a really good job. And Ryan Smith keeps replacing people and bringing people in. It's like, okay, sure, sure. It's, I don't know. I mean, I'm not there. So I don't know what's going on, but you know,
I'll be there for both Christmas and New Year's. The holidays in Salt Lake City, baby.
Salt Lake
New City Year's Eve is going to be wild.
Well, I'm sure your days of partying until the wee hours are over, McMahon. I know.
I'm a full blown adult these days.
Well, I'm not sure that we're going to see the Jazz do anything significant with all of this front office talent scouring different trades they could make. Maybe something small, but. What's happened, we just had December 15th arrive, and as I talked to different league executives, some teams are starting to show their hands in what they're looking for and willing to do in the trade market. It is definitely beginning, the chatter is picking up. I'm sure if you're into this sort of stuff, you've noticed an uptick in rumors, and absolutely, there's a lot of that going out there. And so I think there's a few teams that pretty clearly are motivated to do something. And, you know, we talked on this pod earlier this week about the Pacers. Wednesday, their owner, Herb Simon, called a press conference. I think it was the first press conference he's had in 4 or 5 years to refute the concept that they're going to tear their team down. He says he doesn't believe in tanking, which if you've watched him as an owner, you know. But I think absolutely the Pacers are going to do something. They might trade one. They might trade two players. I would think Caris LeVert and Miles Turner, most likely in that order from what I understand. I know there's a lot of discussion about Sabonis out there, that there's a lot of people saying, claiming various things. Bontemps, I haven't heard Sabonis's name in the trade market. I have heard Turner and LeVert, though.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Pacers are sort of in the same position they've been in for several years now, where they have a pretty interesting mix of guys. They're sort of a poor man's version of the Jazz, right? Small market team. They've done a good job of drafting and developing players, trading, you know, finding guys, you know, trade for Sabonis in the Paul George trade with Victor Oladipo. They get Caris LeVert as sort of a throw and ancillary part of the James Harden trade last year. You know, it's Victor Oladipo goes to Houston instead. But their team that's not good enough to really be in the mix for a top four seed or anytime soon in the East, especially now that the East is much better than it's been. And, you know, the question for them is going to be, what path do they try to take going forward from here? And, you know, as McMahon said earlier, his guy, Rick Carlisle, is now in Indiana, and he and Kevin Pritchard are there. And, you know, they have been around long enough to look at this team and see it's probably not good enough to be that level of team. But Herb Simon, throughout his entire tenure as owner of the team, has never wanted the Pacers to rebuild, as he said in this interview this week. He's been adamant about he doesn't want to do a tank job. He doesn't want the team to be bad. He doesn't think anyone's going to show up to the games, even though they're already having trouble getting fans to go to the games in Indiana right now. So, you know, the most telling stat about that team is they haven't had a pick inside the top 10 since George McLeod in, I think, 1989.
Yes, you must listen to the podcast earlier this week.
Yes, that's, as you said, that's right. So it's the fact that they have not been in the top 10 in 30 years tells you that this is a team that does not believe in trying to bottom out. So if they are going to trade any of these guys, whether it's Sabonis or Miles Turner or Caris LeVert, you would think they're not going to want to do that for draft picks or future assets. They're going to want to do that for guys who can help them win now.
All I'm going to say is
all the more complicated to make that kind of a trade, because you're then trying to swap them for other guys. And I'm just not sure what they're going to wind up doing because of that.
All I'm going to say is McMahon wrote a lot about Luka and Rick not getting along. I think Caris and Luka probably could have some conversations right now.
Get in line.
They could share. I think they could share a cold Slovenian beverage.
My Luka needs to lay off the cold beverages for a little bit while he's working his way into shape.
Light. So I don't think that's been the greatest partnership.
But listen, Rick, 62-year-old Rick Carlisle did not sign up for a teardown and a rebuild. Okay,
yeah,
Herb Simon did not give Rick a $29 million contract to oversee a rebuild. But well, as you guys
Simon
are saying,
is 87 years old. He's right. Not, don't sell him on a, you know, but forget about that. Just, you have to think about when, so when you come up with your Miles Turner, mm-hmm. Caris LeVert trades, don't have it be a 2027 protected
right.
first.
Right.
You know, make him an offer, but make him an offer that's going to help him. It's the thing that Herb Simon said clearly, we want to retool on the go. He said on the go. So, you know, when they traded Paul George, they traded for two players who could help them immediately. Oladipo and Sabonis both turned into all-stars. So obviously LeVert and Turner aren't that quality of player, but that's what they're looking for.
Yeah. They're 3 games out of the play-in, 4 games out of the sixth seed right now. They're thinking that and not, you know, how do we improve our lottery odds? That's for sure.
And they'd probably argue that they've had some bad luck. I want to say there's something like 4-13 in games decided by, or 4-9 in games decided by 5 points or less. I mean, if you flip some of those games around, things look a lot different. But yeah, I mean, ultimately, that's the thing. Like, however you want to try to construct, you know, if you get in the trade machine and try to look at trades, if you're a fan sitting at home, that's what, the way you got to look at it is they're not trading for a pile of picks. They want guys who are going to be on the court today.
And the same thing with Portland. Right. Portland is another team that, hey, if it's about retooling around Damian Lillard, your 2026 first rounder is not part of that conversation. Right. Now, Portland also is a team that obviously is struggling. I think it's pretty clear that the Blazers hit their ceiling with the CJ Dame combo, you know, and their ceiling was getting swept in the conference finals by the Warriors. No shame in that, but it's not, they've never been a legitimate championship contender, and they're not going to be with the group that they have. And so, you know, there's going to be a whole lot of CJ, and there have been for years, but Neil Olshey now obviously is out of the mix. And, you know, CJ McCollum talked to Jason Quick of The Athletic and all but said, hey, I'm bracing to get traded.
Well, I talked to an executive this week who told me every single Portland Trailblazer is available with the exception of Damian.
Mm-hmm.
Now most teams, when you get right down to brass tacks, every player would be available except for their franchise player. So it's not like that's a stunning statement, but considering the Blazers just made an executive change, it's hard to know what's going to happen. And the message that has come out after the executive change is we are willing to listen on anybody. So the Blazers could go a lot of different directions, particularly with a couple of guys who are free agents to be. Yusef Nurkic and Anfernee Simons. I'm not saying that either of those guys are going to bring back a player that's going to transform the way Dame feels about that team. But, you know, everybody talks about McCollum. There's more interesting players there. And obviously, they're in a free fall right now. I think they've lost 9-10. Did they play last night? I don't remember checking out their performance last night. Yeah, they lost to the Grizzlies. So I think, is that 10 of 11? Yeah. Another great game for Desmond Bane, by the way. He's real quick, not Desmond Bane, who's having a spectacular season. They just keep winning without Ja. But
they've lost 7 in a row. They're 11-18 now. I mean, it's, yeah.
They, 1-11 on the road, the Blazers. 1-11.
Is that good?
They need a it's not great. They need a pretty significant retooling. And, you know, we're looking right above them in the Western Conference standings. And boy, oh boy, would a play-in spot mean a lot to the poor, sad sack Sacramento Kings after all these years.
This is
and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Yeah, Minnesota Timberwolves, Sacramento Kings in 9th and 10th in the West.
This is another thing that the executives are talking about. The Kings and Timberwolves. So first off, there's been a number of rumors that have gone around the league in the last few weeks about Ben Simmons trades involving the Maury Quadrangular.
Mm-hmm.
The Maury Quadrangular would be the Philadelphia 76ers, Daryl Morey, general manager, president, whatever his title is.
Yep.
Minnesota Timberwolves, who are run now by Sasha Gupta, who worked for Daryl Morey. The Kings, who are run by Monty McNair, who worked for Daryl Morey. And the Rockets, who are run by Raphael Stone, while there's some scar tissue there, worked for Daryl Morey. And I am not going to tell you some of these preposterous scenarios that have been floated to me, but let's just say there's been a lot of discussion because as you look at it, the Timberwolves really would like to get Ben Simmons. That is not a secret. That is not new. And I'm sure that there's been lots of stuff thrown back and forth. The Kings are really struggling and really want to be competitive. They've already fired Luke Walton and they have surplus perimeter players.
Yes.
It's not news that Buddy Hield, I saw that like this week, it was like perceived as, oh my God, it's breaking news. Buddy Hield is available. I was like, oh, I didn't know.
Since the second the ink was dry on that deal.
Right. I thought Buddy Hield was boarding a flight to Los Angeles last summer. Yeah. Hell yeah, Buddy Hield's available. But they might even be willing to discuss other guys on their roster who, you know, Marvin Bagley's wanted out of there forever. But,
oh, yeah. De'Aaron Fox. Yeah. Listen, I don't think, like, there was widely reported going into the season, oh, De'Aaron Fox is off the table. Sir, I've heard a lot of smoke that that might not be the case at this point.
Well, De'Aaron Fox came to camp about 15 pounds heavier than he left in, and he hasn't had the greatest year. So,
and they've drafted guards in the lottery the last 2 years, both of whom have shown promise.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
The word that I got this week that almost nobody on that roster is untouchable, and they have made offers that have reflected as such. Whether or not they can get something done, it remains to be seen, but I think they're in the mix and they're in the mix for Ben Simmons. And it's actually a weird situation because I think they'd love to be able to figure out a way to get Ben Simmons. Minnesota would love to figure out a way to get Ben Simmons earlier this week. And I know Karl Towns has kind of ebbed and flowed, but Towns had kind of a low moment after a game 4 or 5 days ago where he just said, I'm tired of losing. I don't have the exact quote in front of me. It's something like the food tastes bad. You know, the air smells bad. Like he was just down. He was just down. And so, but you know, and then of course you've got the Rockets who are trying to trade John Wall. Not that that would be, not that that makes sense, but they're in the market for that. Eric Gordon is playing better.
He's playing very well, actually.
Yeah. And so I've had executives tell me that when Ben Simmons gets traded, it will include one or more of the quadrangular. Not that that's where best is like Ben Simmons would go, but that they would be probably involved in a trade because Ben Simmons' trade is likely to end up being, a multi, team deal.
Yeah. And the Rockets obviously have been much better lately. They've won, I think it's 8 of 11, but they get, hey, this is very early in a rebuild. So they are trying to wedge their way in and they'll try to wedge their way in and get ammo for a rebuild for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, Bontemps, is there any team that we didn't talk about there that you think is definitely going to do something?
It's an interesting question. I mean,
what about your Boston Celtics?
Well, I mean, I get a lot of questions about what Celtics are going to do over the next couple of months from people around the league. And I think it's hard to know exactly what direction they're going to go in. I mean, we just spent a bunch of time talking about Danny Ainge. He'd been here for 18 years. Now Brad Stevens is now in charge in the front office. And, Brad did immediately go out and trade Kemba Walker a couple weeks after he took the job. He went and got Josh Richardson in trade shortly thereafter. So he did show an early willingness to make some moves. I think it, you know, they've kind of been this month of December was always going to be tough for them. They currently sit in 10th in the East, but they are only a couple of games, or they're one game out of sixth and a couple games out of fifth. So, things could look a lot different in a couple of weeks, but yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what's going to happen with them exactly. I expect Phoenix to probably at some point try to make a move for another piece. They've been rumored to be in the mix for a bunch of different things over the past couple of months.
They could use another combo forward.
Yeah, they have not. They've never replaced Dario Saric after he tore his ACL in the finals last year. So if they could, they're another team that if they could find a way to play small a little more effectively, would be
they've
good.
They've been attached to Thad Young on and off, really since Thad Young got traded to San Antonio, but they haven't done the deal, and maybe it's just because they don't like the deal.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, the thing about it is you look across the East, and there's a lot of teams in the East that you could make an argument will be looking to try to make a move. Right. The Knicks have a bunch
of teams there's some teams looking to make. I just don't know how many are actually going.
How many are going to actually happen either. But when you have so many teams that are in the mix, it's, you know, there could be a lot more moves than normal, or there could be a lot less because teams might be afraid to do something. But with the way the East is jumbled up, and you've got actually the team that we haven't talked about that I think will make a move at some point is the Cavs. The way the Cavs are playing, I would just expect them to be pretty aggressive in trying to upgrade their team to make sure they make the playoffs and continue this momentum they've got behind Evan Mobley and the way they've played this season. That would probably be the one team. If I looked in the East and said, I'm going to pick one team that's definitely going to make a move. I have to think Cleveland will do something with the way they're playing to try to upgrade their roster.
I think the Knicks actually are a team that may want to do something because but first off, they're not playing Kemba Walker, and Kemba may have some value out there. But I think the Knicks might be in that boat too.
And when you mentioned Cat as something, okay, you got your antennas up there as, you know, it, whether it's pre-deadline or at some point, okay, could that be I'm not going to call him a superstar. Could that be a star on the move?
I don't sense that. I think he's just frustrated and he's verbalizing it. We'll see where it goes in the summer.
Antennas up. I think we need to have our Bradley Beal antennas up. You know, the Wizards got off to a great start. They've lost 7 of 9. You know, he gave the interview to our old buddy Chris Haynes, where he's basically like, essentially, I don't have the quote in front of me, but it was basically, well, let's wait and see before we discuss my future in Washington.
I think you need your antennas up on that one. For sure. I think, Washington, I think they started out, I had the number here.
10-4, and they're 15-14.
Yeah, and their defense has collapsed. StatMuse. Let me track that down. I'll get it for you in a second. StatMuse, which is a good follow on Twitter, described it. I will find it. They started out 10-3, and they were 5th in defense. They are 5-11 since, 28th in defense. And
I would say that's not trending in the best direction.
Right. The front office got an extension. Tommy Shepard got an extension. Beal has basically made it clear he's not going to extend in the he's not going to extend in the short term. So we'll see as we get closer to February what happens there. As for the Cavs, Bontemps, I don't think their big decision would be Rubio. Do you trade Rubio? Do you extend Rubio? Because this is the last year of his contract. Do you want to, make sure he doesn't go anywhere? Or do you play him out to the end of the season and just take everything he can, realizing that he very well might want to go somewhere else next year, even with the year that he's had now? I think Rubio is a big decision regardless. And then you've got the Colin Sexton decision. Sexton would have value, even though he's out for the year, because you trade him and you've got his rights, his restricted rights. And, considering, you may be able to get him at a salary number because the market probably won't be as hot on him because of the injury. There's value there. I would not trade Sexton. I would hold on to him. But
I was going to say there could also be value with him this summer as a sign and trade. So it's not necessarily, trade him by the deadline or, Right. You know, you either lose them or keep
them. But Bontemps is saying they're trying to, you know, the Cavs are up in fourth place now.
I was less picking out any specific guy that they were going to move, though Colin Sexton is the one that, you know, clearly if they're going to make a significant upgrade, you would think he'd be the piece you'd dangle out there if somebody has interest. But yeah, I just, they're 18 and 12. They've won 8 of their last 10. They've won 5 in a row. Evan Mobley, you know, Scotty Barnes is making it a competitive race because he's been also pretty incredible this season, but Evan Mobley has been phenomenal as a rookie. He and Jared Allen have been unstoppable in the paint, as we've talked about in the past defensively. And, you know, the Cavs are ahead of the Heat, ahead of the Celtics, ahead of the Sixers in the East standings. They've got one of the best defenses in the league. It's been a remarkable story. And, you know, for a team that's been out of the playoffs since LeBron left, I would think they're going to be active in trying to bolster that roster and make sure they get in, because it'd be a pretty great story if they're able to do it.
There's some people who have connected them to LeVert. I have not heard that. I have not heard actionable talk on that, but that rumor is out there. And the only reason that something like that would make sense is where the Cavs need help is on the wing. They are thin on the wing and could use some talent upgrade there. And
they have a wing on the roster. They don't have wings. They have a wing.
I mean, they really,
by the way, has played well lately.
They really could use a wing player. That's the thing. If they do go into the trade market, that's where you got to think they're going to add somebody. I mean, they've got a couple different point guards that are, you know, they've got Rubio and Garland. They've got bigs that are good. You know, like they're playing Lowry Markkanen though at small forward. Like ultimately, if they could find some wing help, that could really be a significant thing for them.
By the way, basketballreference.com has their playoff probabilities report, which is a bunch of nerdy numbers and, you know, computer simulations, blah, blah, blah. They have three teams that they give better than 10% odds of winning the finals. The Warriors at 36 and change, the Jazz a little bit under 33, and your Cleveland Cavaliers at 10.4% chance of winning the finals.
Eat your heart out, LeBron James.
I tell you what, though, man, Clutch has a player in Cleveland, Darius Garland. If we're going to have the PMIP conversation, premature most improved player conversation, you better get Darius Garland's name in there.
Desmond Bane as well, who we're just talking about. Although that's really just an opportunity. He's had a great opportunity. You want to get most improved? How about most improved in the last 2 months? Jaren Jackson, who was dreadful the first month after he signed that $100 million extension. And for the last month has been awesome. I mean, talk about the split. We talk about the splits on the Warriors or on the Wizards. How about the splits on Jaren Jackson the first 2 months of the season? But that's another story for another day. All right. Thanks for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. Thank you, McMahon and Bontemps. We'll speak to you guys next week.
Adios, amigos.